Is an interesting, had an interesting kind of history to it, the piece that I wrote. The magical underpinnings and the Maori sound worlds in Taniwha come from my collaboration that I began with the New Zealand composer Martin Lodge, but he became ill. So I then took on to, with his blessing, to create a completely different piece. And I used the Tangapōro stems recorded for me in New Zealand by Horomono Horo, who's a one of the foremost experts in Tangapōro playing in New Zealand. And I also recorded in multiple flutes and my actually water tanks, physical water tanks in Oregon, to get the certain sounds that I wanted, and hand drum stems. And I created this piece in Logic, actually. I recorded all these stems and then composed the piece that way. It was really fun for the first time creating a piece purely by sound and not by notation.
Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted, and my guest on the program today is flutist, composer, and multidisciplinary artist Tessa Brinkman. I'm talking to her about her new album, Take Wing, Roll Back, and I'll be featuring several excerpts from the album as well. And I open the program with an excerpt of a piece called Taniwha, featuring Tessa and Maori musician Horomona Horo. Let's continue the conversation.
Tell me about the album. I mean, how long has this been percolating? What were you thinking? All of that stuff.
It's been percolating for a long time. There was this thing called a pandemic that sort of threw its spanner in the works. But it's, I would say, in the last, God, okay, so when did I, okay, it was published this year, February 9th. New Focus Recordings released it. And I was recording it around 2018, 19 zeros. Yeah, it's kind of hard to say because it's sort of, things took their time and I would work on a project, then I would start for a while, then I'd work on it again or work on something else. So in my mind, it's been morphing itself for the last, 5 years at least. And I was very anxious to get it done, this year. So I'm never going to take this long to make an album ever again.
Yeah, I feel like that's famous last words.
But... yeah, exactly. But I'm saying it publicly now.
It can definitely take a long time. Did you have all the composers in mind? And of course, you're one of the composers as well, but or did that happen more organically, or how did that come about?
Very much organically. I mean, I didn't even have a real concept for this album other than I just wanted to create sound worlds for listeners to be inside and to have this sort of unique visceral experience. And I couldn't even define what that would be. I didn't want to. I just wanted to discover that through the piece, through creating the piece, through the collaboration with the musicians I worked with. And so things evolved, which I think is a really nice way to do it, actually. If you've got the luxury of time, you could talk about it this way, right? The luxury of time to evolve a piece. You play it once, you perform it once, you go, well, it could do more development. And you go put it back to the drawing board and you do other things to it. It can really help a piece expand. And I think the rushing to have to finish a work and then there it is kind of hard on composers, actually, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I as a composer personally, am still mystified by the process of creating music, like 100% mystified by it, even though I do
Yes.
it. And I know some composers like pretend that they understand every aspect of it, and I'm like, I don't think you do, because it's mystical.
It is fascinating actually because you can really fall in love with sounds and a certain kind of idea, and then a few years later it's like, eh, yeah, it's fine, but it's not the magic anymore. And I'm always curious about what magic is hitting the zeitgeist of the day or of the year and what isn't, and we live in very peculiar times, right? I just feel like we're sort of all watching the Titanic ship sink. Right, our planet is in this sort of trajectory, and there's a lot of feeling of just sort of powerlessness, and then the people scolding you for feeling powerless about it. But it's kind of like all the rhetoric about the rah-rah about we're so great, we're going to do this, we're going to achieve that has sort of disappeared. And then a lot of questions about where we're going and what kind of future we want. And I really do think that affects the arts, about what kind of vision we have for ourselves. What, how relevant are we? Are we as relevant as food and water and housing? I mean, for us as creators, what we do feels as big as food and water and housing. But it's I'm just really interested in things that make people feel connected to themselves and to each other, I think. So I strive for that in my music and collaborations, physical collaborations as a performer, as well as imagining in this world that I'm creating as a composer, how I can reach people. But, I mean, just because I think that doesn't mean it happens. It's just it's something I feel. Yeah. So I recorded this with Caroline Delune, and it was because it was the pandemic. She recorded her part in Paris and then sent it to me. And then I practiced against her playing, and then I recorded my part, and then we put it together. So that was a crafty way of doing it. I don't think I would do it that way again because it's a lot of work. But we managed to do it. So the piece itself, it's a very beautiful piece. Nori Fukushi, the Japanese composer, and you can, to me, his piece sounds a bit like Takemitsu meets flamenco meets all kinds of French abstract musics, and Messiaen in particular, actually. If you like, I can read you the poem pieces he wrote, the lines that he wrote.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, so the first one is the forest sway in the way of the wind. Deep in the forest, dark the devil dwells. When stars from heaven fall, the lakes stand clear, reflecting. Fog subtly veils the face of the river. Dawn brightens the day of mortals robed in purple. Birds take wing with the morning. Nor sage nor seer knows where the endless prairie trail goes. Good indeed to be at rest. So I think he wrote those little lines. He was hiking in the mountain while he was at a music festival, and that's why he was inspired to write this piece because of not only the conversations he was having with the forest, but the conversations he was having inside of himself with himself. So it's a sort of a psychological piece as well as a piece, that's inspired by the natural world.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kara Stacey is a South African composer, she had written me a piece for flute and piano, and I said to her, "Hey, you know, wouldn't this might really work well for if we prepared the piano, and if we did it for piccolo, sort of, you know, extend the techniques of the piccolo." And so I took this piece and kind of like did a whole bunch of stuff with it, and then we sort of worked on it together. So we've basically co-written this piece as it stands now. And she was inspired to write this piece based on her stay in Brazil. She was going through some hard times. And so a friend said to her, "Go bathe in the sea," because there's a saying here in Bahia that you ne never leave the water the same. And so for her, it was a very healing experience. And so the music meditates on the value of water and cycles and healing. Built from all kinds of cyclical movement, rhythms based on the title, You Never Came Out the Same, connective nodes, pocketing techniques from Central African xylophone music, modal material from Sundanese chamber music, and improvisation based on my own experiences on the Māori marae. And yeah, it's just a kind of a wild little piece. And so Kathy and I had a fun putting that together.
Thank you.
The other two pieces are by Andita Kumalo. And I actually co-wrote one piece with him, or arranged it actually, a piece. So the one of the pieces called Wade Through Water for alto, flute, and piano. So he had written this piece originally for clarinet and piano. So I asked if I could arrange it for alto, flute, and piano. And he and I, you know, added a whole bunch of extended techniques, and he really liked the sound world of it. It's very, of course, very different, you know, when you reorchestrate, you know, a piece. The other piece that Andile wrote was for flute and piano, was Zeuze, which is a term that means, it has two meanings. Means to invite someone to visit, but to also issue a warning about that visit. It's a very interesting term. And he dedicated it to his daughter, Ananinha. Ananiya is his daughter's name. And that one's for flute and piano. But what I like about Andile's work too is that he doesn't feel that he has to sort of do this kind of faux representation of what being African is. You know, he is African. He's thoroughly African. He's Zulu, actually, and he wanted to be able to explore musical languages as he found them. So he's very attracted to the spectral language. Also being inspired by other Western languages and the Asian music and other sounds around the African continent. I think also, you know, the African continent itself suffers a lot from people just assuming that it's all about rhythm. But there's a lot of interesting things that go on melodically and timbrally with African music. And African music is so diverse. I mean, it's a vast continent, right? With all these different pockets of culture that have evolved and keep evolving as they go through, you know, all their different socio-political, you know, transformations. And so, you know, I like the fact that he's just taking this where he wants to. And he came to Columbia actually to study a few years ago in New York. So, you know, I feel like I can hear a bit of New York in his compositions too.
Thank you.
I'm always fascinated by the way geography affects our thinking. You know, I don't know if you ever noticed this, but when you travel, when you go to another place, you start eating things that you would never normally eat, not just because they've been offered to you, but you suddenly don't feel like the things that you used to eat back home. You want to eat the things that are around you, and I find that really interesting. Like I find that my body suddenly really wants to adapt, and think the rhythm of your body just feels very different, you know. So I'm always fascinated by how the human body processes sound, you know, what it makes us want to do or want to hear or want to play.
Yeah, I mean, travel is interesting in general. If you stay in a place for 3 or 4 days, you feel like a different person. And then when you come home, sometimes part of that has this dreamlike quality to it,
That's
you know.
right. Yes. I mean, I was in New Zealand in February, and part of me is still on the beach there.
Nice.
Not only because it's got some of the most incredible beaches in the world there, they're still clean and wild and amazing. But, you know, it's almost like, you know, when I went back there in February, a piece of my soul flew back in. It was amazing. Just, you know, the sort of my childhood experiences of being on those beaches and to be back there again was just incredible.
Yeah, I've lived all over the United States, but I've never known what it's like to, you know, essentially leave home and live in another country. I mean, that's a very different thing.
It's sort of a crazy thing to do because once you leave a place, you can never really go back. I mean, you can go back physically and visit, but it's not the same. The place that you left has changed, and people don't know you as well or as much or at all, right? And so you don't belong in, but you don't belong to the place that you live in either, your foreign place, because you're still a foreigner. So once you leave your place, you don't belong quite anywhere, or your DNA is in several places. And it is a little disconcerting at times, you know. There's nothing like going back to a place that you're born and people where people know you. They know something about you that's very, very old, and not just what you present that's new.
Yeah, but they also know that you left, and that's always like that's
Never quite forgiven you for it.
let's talk about the solo piece that you have on the album, the Cracticus Fancy.
Oh, yes. Actually, that's one of two pieces. But yes, that's my piece I wrote, Practicus Fancy. So this piece was inspired by a poem by actually a family friend who's a very famous poet in New Zealand, Dennis Glover. He's dead now. But this piece uses an archival recording that he made reading his famous New Zealand poem, The Magpies. Now, when we talk about magpies in New Zealand, Australia, we're really talking about the Australian magpie, which is very different from the European one. So the Australian magpie is renowned for its caroling call, the extraordinary musical calls, and its territoriality, and you know, it's just very insouciant, funny, very clever bird. So I wanted to do a tribute to this poem because for the following five reasons that really inspired me. So the first is that there's an Australian First Nations story of this bird, Cracticus tibicem, which is its new Latin name, using twigs to prise the earth and sky apart, saving the people from perpetual darkness. And so colonists later on brought the magpie to New Zealand. Second reason is that Dennis, the composer, the poet, Dennis Glover, the poet, often visited my grandparents, and he was a sort of a mischievous raconteur sitting at the kitchen table, telling a lot of, you know, kind of off stories. He's a very funny man. Third one is when he was driving a long distance, he stopped to pee by the roadside, and when he saw magpies nearby, that's when he wrote The Magpies. This is the poem. And in my piece, Practicus, this meeting, I've reimagined it from the viewpoint of a magpie who's aware of the poet and how histories weave birds and people together. The fourth reason is the Irish folk song, The Bagpie, and actually there's several versions of that. And the fifth reason is the Great Depression of the 1930s, which this poem references, actually. So it's a very bleak and funny, dark ballad that Dennis Glover wrote. And so I had fun using his archival recording, and then archival recordings of the magpie itself, and then creating this piccolo part with it. And it was, a tribute to all those aspects.
The magpies. When Tom and Elizabeth took the farm, the bracken made their bed, and quaddle-oodle-addle-waddle-doodle. The magpies said, Tom's hand was drawn to the plough, Elizabeth's lips were red, and quaddle-oodle-addle-waddle-doodle. The magpies said, year in, year out they worked, while the pines grew overhead. Waddle-doodle, the magpies said. But all the beautiful crops soon went to the mortgage man instead. And quaddle-oodle-addle-waddle-doodle, the magpies said. Elizabeth is dead now, it's years ago. Old Tom went light in the head. And quaddle-oodle-addle-waddle-doodle, the magpies said. The farm's still there. Mortgage corporations couldn't give it away. And Cordaloodle had a water doodle. The magpies say,
I think stories are everything. You know, people's stories fascinate me. I always love hearing people's stories about how and why they create things and the meaning of things and how that meaning changes. I'm fascinated by our assigned meaning to music, you know, and how it means different things to people. I mean, you know, even things like, for example, synesthesia. So I see when I hear sound, I see color. And you know, it's, I wouldn't say I don't have a super strong piece of it, but it basically it's been with me my entire life. But color means a lot to me visually as well as, you know, through sound, right? Timbre and such. And, there are many, many ways in which I access that. And in many ways it's deeply unconscious and it's hard for me to even describe. You know, a lot of people have synesthesia and they all have it in different ways. They assign different values to different, you know, pitches and different colors, et cetera. And just fascinating to see how different we all are.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And even people who don't assign meaning to the music. You know, people are always creating narratives in their heads. You know, I hear this all the time. And it's so interesting. A piece of mine will get played and three people will come up and tell me three completely different narratives that they concocted in their heads while, you know, and each of them is convinced this is what the piece is, you know, and I'm like, wow, that's wild.
Exactly. I mean, it's kind of like this album too. People have told me they've had very strong reactions, you know, that one piece really speaks to them, you know, and it's all very different. So that fascinates me. Like one piece, why not, you know, one piece over another. I'm curious to know what kind of stories people really need to hear right now too.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say need to hear, it's not even just for comfort's sake or just to be sort of pleasantly numb, but what things make us feel alive and delighted, you know,
mm-hmm.
glad to be alive. I think that would be a good goal, actually. You know, what can we do that makes us glad to be alive today? Right. We might not be alive tomorrow, but if we're alive today, what makes us glad to be alive? What brings us, you know, joy, whatever it is. And that's, you know, why I'm fascinated by all kinds of corners of experimental music, all kinds of corners, traditional musics. They all have different things to say. You know, I mean, I also have strong taste about things I really dislike, but just because I dislike it doesn't mean that it has no value. It's just that I dislike it. Whatever that.
No, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's tons of things that have value to lots of people that I happen to dislike, you know, and that's okay.
Exactly.
Luckily, there's tons of things in the world. So exactly. We all, you know, as long as we're not actively telling people this is the way, this is the path, which obviously a lot of people do, unfortunately. But is there anything else you want to say about this album that I didn't ask or I didn't cover?
Let me just look here. Let's talk about Sonus Redux.
Yeah, please.
So originally I commissioned Todd Barton, who's a wonderful composer and a boucle expert. He's an expert in a lot of early electronic instruments. So I commissioned him to write a piece, Sonus Sonorus, for solo Baroque flute and multiple Baroque flutes. And this piece quotes Jean-Marie Leclerc's Sonata number 2 in C major as well. And so I, you know, played all my multiple traversi, and that was really fun to perform it as that piece. And then later we decided that we'd like to collaborate, and he would play boucle and I would add prepared piano. And so then this whole piece became the Sonus Redux and the wave rolled back.
Thanks so much to Tessa Brinkman for being a guest on the program today. Her album Take Wing, Roll Back is out on New Focus Records. Find it anywhere that you get your music. And you should especially go to Bandcamp and pay for it. It's always nice to remunerate artists for their incredible work that they do. Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of providing equitable access to the transformative power of music making. Find out more at acmusic.org. On behalf of Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted. Thanks so much for listening.